We welcome you to Press Row, a TexAgs produced podcast breaking down the key storylines in Aggie football with the people who cover it closest. You can find us each week on TexAgs.com, iTunes, or the podcast player of your choice. I'm Gabe Bach of TexAgs.com, and we rotate around here a little bit, mix in some local writers, mix in some TexAgs personalities. Still waiting on Luch, but that's a big story of our life. That'll happen next week, I believe. So we got a lot going on here. Looking forward to this conversation. Coming off of what happened on Saturday in upstate South Carolina, a 24-10 loss to number one and defending national champion Clemson Saturday. And we'll talk all about it. Olin Buchanan with us of TexAgs.com, joined by local writers Brent Zwerdeman of the Houston Chronicle and from the Bryan College Station Eagle, Travis Brown, and Robert Sesta. We'll say right off the bat, I didn't know if we were going to have Cease today on the program because – he didn't have a whole lot of football on his mind on Saturday as his wife Jessica had a little heat-related illness. So Cease, wonderful. The number one thing we're going to talk about today real quick is Jessica's healthy and doing well in College Station, working this morning and working today, and you're with us here today. So yeah, that's great.
She said she only wished she had a half day, but I watched the second half on TV watch at the emergency room, the hospital, and Anderson, South Carolina, so I do appreciate the hospitality to South Carolina folks. And my wife, I'm glad you mentioned that because my wife is up there with all the Aggie fans because we bought a scalper's ticket, and she said she just was so impressed at how the Aggies rushed her when she was ready to pass out, giving her water, towels, helping her out, and she didn't know anyone up there, and she said she was kind of fading out, and someone said, hey, that's Sesta's wife. And they still helped her, so I thought that was really great. And she said, of course, she's wearing her daughter, Aggie's mom, because Kimmy graduated class of, is that 2015? But anyway, she just, she teared up when she said about how great the Aggies were to her.
Outstanding.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Now, if it had been Robert out there, they would have just said, that's Cessna, and leave him there.
They threw me, because she was on the top row of the top deck that just pushed me over.
You would have gotten somewhere faster then.
It was really hot. I mean, you're thinking 92, 35% humidity. We deal with this every single day. It was really, really hot there.
See, so I'm going to guess when y'all planned that, y'all said, hey, September in Clemson, South Carolina, probably a pleasant day.
Foliage,
nice. Yeah, falls right around the corner. It wasn't, I think at one point it was 97. They said,
and you felt like you were brutal. Swimming through a pool with the humidity. Yeah. So it was humid. It was hot.
It was.
One reason I was a little surprised that the Aggies, swerving off of that, by the way, that they weren't more acclimated to that, it seemed like, because they did practice in 100-degree weather for a couple straight weeks here in College Station. So I was kind of surprised there were guys that were cramping up quite a bit.
You know, guys were falling out, and I kept asking players today, did it have much to do with the heat, knowing that they were, because of what they practiced in a brutal, almost record amount of 100-degree days in a row, and they're practicing in the heat of it. What do you think it was that? Every other play guys are going down. Was it that, or was it just that was a really physical Clemson team that got after that defensive front a little bit? They were cutting them. They were blocking low a lot. It was mostly on the D-line that guys were going out.
I think it was – a lot of the physicality, because it looked like a physical game, but there was something about that heat that just felt a little different than the heat down here. I don't know if it was just all that Dorian humidity, that the rain showers that were coming in, or being that close to the coast, but it did feel a little different than your Houston, South Texas heat.
Well, and there's one thing about practicing in it. There's another thing about exerting yourself to give full maximum physical effort while you're also in that heat, and somebody else giving maximum physical effort against you as well.
And also, I think the exerting, you're playing the number one ranked team, the mental exhaustion, the physical exhaustion. I think A&M, Jimbo said they did play hard. I think they did, and you get drained when you're mentally so jacked up to play the first of a tough schedule, and I think it took its toll.
Yeah, and when you go out there and you're so hyped up during warmups, and you're so hyped, and it kind of showed when you're so hyped up on the first couple drives of the game, you wear yourself out a lot quicker than Clemson, who this is just the next game on the schedule for them, and it's a big one, but they're not. This isn't a Super Bowl type mentality of the season.
Yeah, I think the most positive thing out of that particular aspect is that Jimbo didn't use Todd being adequately hydrated as an excuse.
Yes, absolutely.
Kellen did say he was going to check on his hydration methods moving forward. You know, he needed to check with his dietitian.
Do we need to put a chart in the bathroom to see
apparently,
how?
Yeah, they're in the media room.
Let's do some general takeaways on this game. And Travis brings a very interesting point that we can talk about, because Was it? Okay, well, this is just another game for Clemson because they're used to these and they win championships and their big games are coming in January and December, late, you know, because they're going to roll through the ACC. Or is this almost – this is a big game, but it's a non-conference game for A&M where they play – they also play 2, 3, and 4, and they play Auburn, who's 8. And, you know, they've got the bigger, more high-profile games coming. Clemson had to have this one, I think, to make sure that they ensure and lock up a quote-unquote signature win. You don't want to lose to A&M and then go play that ACC schedule, I think. And they played like a team that had to come out and win that game. They played like a championship team, really, especially defensively.
Let's say Mond connects with Buckley on that second play of the game, and it's a touchdown, 7-0 Aggies. Aggies going to win the game. You say, how far does Clemson fall at that point as number one? Because it is their big game. It was one they had pointed to, saying this is probably going to be their toughest, you know, part of the schedule, the toughest game on the schedule. They get past the Aggies on their home field, then it's smooth sailing. As Brent Venables said, he said he thought Kellen Mond was going to be the best quarterback they faced that this year. So I do think they treated it as a big game and responded accordingly. And now they feel pretty good about playing, as you mentioned, in January.
And I agree. I think that they did think it's – I mean, even Trevor Lawrence after the game said, you know, they saw all the talk about how A&M was close last year and they wanted to leave no doubts. So I think it was paraphrasing his quote at the end. I do think that they were a team, though, that have been in – a lot of big game situations in the last four seasons and came out starting the game like they'd been there before. Whereas A&M kind of didn't necessarily start out. I mean, you can say that they started out strong, but I think that they were so mentally and so physically jacked up for this game that they kind of, you know, were a little less strong as things went on.
Yeah, you saw that. You saw that in the drops, OB. You saw that in the way they in the way Mond was.
Yeah, I kind of thought Mond was had too much adrenaline. And that's why he was throwing high all early. You know, you talk about in baseball, you know, pitchers overthrowing and throwing too high, right? You guys are baseball guys. And I thought you saw some of that with Kellen. And I think he's probably still the best quarterback that Clemson's going to face in the regular season. But you've got to be the best quarterback that day. And I think there are a lot of factors involved in him not having his best day. And a big part of that is I think Jimbo actually – made a comment today, said sometimes you can want to win too much. And I just think there was sometimes you have just too much adrenaline early and you got to settle yourself down. And it took a while.
Anyone else surprised to see that, though, to Owen's point, that we've all written and talked about how cool and calm and Kellen is in those situations, to see that he was amped up, he was over amped up and throwing high because he was so juiced up? And I think he said as much afterward.
I wasn't surprised because he started games like this before.
Yeah, you know. It was a big game, but I was going to say, driving to the hospital, I was listening to the Clemson broadcast, and one of their ex-athletes, they have a halftime.
C.J. Spiller is there.
And they were talking they talked about a couple things, and they said that being around practice that week, that Clemson was going to be up for this game because A&M had talked so much about how they played well against Clemson. And they also said the number one deal on defense they had talked about out in practice to put pressure on Mond, that they said if you put pressure on him, he would throw high sometimes. And now, once again, I'm just repeating what I heard on their halftime show. And I thought, once again, is we know it is if their radio team, if Dave's out there practice every day, you hear what the defense coaches say and what the offense. Now, whether that's true or not, that's how Clemson was talking to their players about getting ready for this game. You know, put pressure on Mond and let's play better than we did last year. That was obviously a couple keys.
But, you know, the first or the second play of the game,
yeah,
there was no pressure.
No pressure.
Right. You know, he had an open shot and just flat missed it.
Was that the biggest moment of the game? Or was it the Mond fumble when they're down 7-3? Or was it the Matabike? You know, that's the last minute of the half, and it's only 10-3. All right, they got a gimme touchdown there, too, after the 15 free.
There were a lot of moments, but I would say from my perspective, it was the biggest moment because that changes everything because Buckley was wide open.
Yeah.
And he would have outrun, you know, that secondary, hit him in stride. He's in the end zone. The stadium is shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, scoreless first quarter. Aggies score earlier in the second, and you're going, man, they're grinding it out. But that, to me, that would have changed everything, the whole persona, the whole setting, had they scored.
For me, it had to be the Mond fumble, just because I felt like kind of that same feeling of, you know, A&M scores that first field goal, Clemson comes back, scores a touchdown, but you still felt like A&M was in the game and the momentum was still anyone's to grab. And when Mon fumbled that ball and they came out down and scored, it ended up rattling off 17 straight points after that fumble. I just felt like the momentum was right in the middle of the game, the tug of war, and then as soon as Mon fumbled, the rope went all the way towards the Clemson side.
See, I thought it was – you want to –
No, go ahead.
I'll defer.
You're right.
I thought it, you could make a very strong case that it was the Matt BK roughing the passer, because at the time you got less than a minute to go there at midfield, and I'm thinking – I remember having said to Gabe, if you can get through this half and go in the halftime down 10-3, you can say, guys, we're a touchdown down and played like – did not play well. And
I bet that's how they said it.
This is a family press row.
And, you know, for all the problems they had, like the missed throw and the fumble, and when they got down and had first and 10 at the 15 and drop a pass, and so all the things that they did, all the pratfalls, you had a chance to go down 10-3, and then you get a foolish penalty and, you know, give them 15 easy yards, and they score with like 30 seconds.
I tell you. Something else to add on to that play, Trevor Lawrence was asked about that in particular afterward, and he said he was mad. He was yelling at Matt Abike, and that really fired him up. So in that sense, it also fired up a guy who's got a very good chance at winning the Heisman Trophy as
well.
Well,
the
next
play, right?
To add, yeah. To
the
add
next play
to
was a completion out of the
point.
Two.
Yeah.
And then he ran it in. So
yeah, he scored were, that. Yeah. Yeah. He that scored the touchdown on that drive, and you felt like he was really – man on a mission at that point.
So a lot of talk has been, well, A&M, they didn't really win by 14 because they had a gimme one at the end. Well, you know, you gave Clemson a gimme one before half, and you didn't take advantage of one you had a great opportunity to score seven on when you threw a pick. And another one where Bill catches the ball on the field goal drive, that could have been in seven instead of 3-2. So I felt like it was a 14-point game. The scoreboard said it. It looked like it. It felt like it. I didn't feel like it was.
I guarantee you, Clemson was trying to keep them from scoring.
Oh, yes.
They were.
They had
starters in.
I think there was 85,000 people up there that, you know, gave the points.
A big part of that was.
Exactly.
If Texas A&M does not score at the end, Clemson wins by 20-plus points for what ties an NCAA record with Alabama. They were gunning for that.
Yes,
12
sir.
Straight games of they scoring 20-plus points. Before, yeah, they absolutely wanted that. They were doing everything they could to keep him out of the end zone as opposed to just saying, hey, it's still double-digit victory.
So break the tie. Which one was the most important play?
I would vote for Brent's play. They talked about only because I felt
– Only because he was still at the press box.
Right off the bat, A&M called Dowd up the right play. They hit that play. Everybody's jacked up. But I felt that was kind of an indication of what was to come. Just so close to too many mistakes. It was the first of many mistakes as opposed to being the first of many great plays. And I know logic because it's always hard to say the cause and effect, what cause and then what effect there is. But, man, if they hit that and that place is quiet after that place was so juiced up for the prayer and God bless America and A&M would go up 7-0, I would think that – I agree with you that Mon would have got a little more relaxed, maybe just a good jacked up, but it just was a sign. Even though they come back and took that lead 3-0, even when I left for my emergency, I felt that Clemson was in control. At that time, 7-3 and driving again. I just felt they were in control, whereas A&M hit that play, maybe they'd have a chance to be in control.
You take Brent's side, see if I navigate on the next road
okay.
trip.
Sure.
You know what a thought I had when they missed on that play to Buckley? I thought – wow, this is going to – I'm not going to say it was going to be easy for the Aggies, but they're going to have multiple opportunities to do just that, and they're going to connect. So I was sitting there thinking, this is going to happen, but it didn't really happen from there.
Yeah, we saw that all.
So it was a time.
Yeah, no, it's only one explosive play over 20 yards in the game, and it was a swing pass to Buckley. He did all the work.
10 last year.
Heck of a stiff arm on that play.
It was.
That's right.
That got him to the 15, and on the next play, he has Beal at the 10 with nobody around him on the sideline, and he just – doesn't make the catch. Mm-hmm. If he makes that catch, I'm thinking at the very worst, he turns and falls forward, and you're looking at second and two from the seven. And if he makes that catch, you probably go in and get that touchdown and still get the 7-0 lead.
Let's go around to our reporter storylines. We've been talking a little bit about Mond, and it was more than just Mond, and we're going to talk some offense and defense here, but let's stay on Mond here, Travis.
Yeah, it's curious to me to kind of jump into the psyche of Mond, because it's kind of what Brent talked about a little bit earlier, in that he seems so cool and calm and collected, and really chose his words wisely his first 2 years here. So I think it took us all a little bit aback when at SEC Media Days he comes out firing and says, hey, I'm going to be the best quarterback in the SEC. And then he shows all of this confidence. But it still seems like there's plenty of things to work on. And it just seems like a weird little mentality shift that doesn't seem like necessarily the Mond that has been successful here the last couple of years. And I think that it's interesting to hear some of the things he talked about today, especially when I believe it was Zach Taylor was asking about that final drive, which you bring up still had a lot of value. I know a lot of people might say it was just throwaway garbage time. They were trying to go no huddle and trying to go up tempo on that, and they really weren't able to because and Mond admitted the fact that he just wasn't comfortable getting the communications in from Jimbo to make that go fast enough. They did ultimately end up scoring, but for all the time that Jimbo has talked about how Mond is mentally in the game and he can come back, and if he makes a mistake, he knows exactly why he made it. There does seem to be, even beyond some of the overthrows and the physical, there seems to be some mental errors there that I don't know, we're not necessarily in the playbook, but don't necessarily haven't been there in the past couple of years. And I'm not throwing Mond completely on their best. I still think he's by far A&M's best option and will be the quarterback moving through and will make improvements. But it's just seemed like he's been a little bit of a different quarterback in different ways. And
against the number one team in the country on the road or in general?
In general.
Texas State, he was all world.
Well, mostly, I'm talking a little bit about the way he's spoken to us
okay.
in the beforehand. And then if you look at Clemson this past week, you haven't heard from him or Jimbo saying, yeah, we weren't on the right page making communication calls to go up tempo. And that just, it's a little bit different.
That did surprise me a little bit at SEC Media. It seemed like there was a concerted effort to up his swagger, whatever you want to call it, by him saying something like, I'm the best quarterback in the SEC. It seemed really out of character. I would think something like that is all by design for him to step up and say he's going to be more vocal and you know, take charge of this team. But in the end, I don't know how much all that impacts, you know, playing at Clemson in terms of what happened. But I was surprised to see him and admit to, and I'll give him credit on this, being accountable and saying mm-hmm. that, yeah, he did have the adrenaline and the juices flowing a little bit too much in that game.
He said it was his fault on the guys. Two guys blitzed from the same gap, and he totally looked the wrong way, so he admitted that. And then he also admitted there's a lot to get in, and sometimes it was hard to go hurry up because I got to get this, and this, make sure we're in a perfect play. But you need to scrap some of that in a two-minute situation in an effort to just play as fast as you can. That's pretty interesting.
He did not have his best game. We all understand that. I don't know if it was as bad as it looked, too. I don't know if I'd completely agree with the totals that Jimbo was giving, but he said he had six drops.
Seven
is what he said. Six after the game, seven today.
He said seven of plus 15 yards, what he said today at the press box.
Is that right? I thought he said seven.
He said seven major drops.
He said seven of more than 15. I'm with you that he went up one from after the game, and he said 15 yards, which
he called
I thought
a major drop.
Yeah.
So, you know, okay, if we're going to say, all right, you expect your guy to make that catch. If you get half of those, four of the seven, does it change, depending on what the catches they are, does that change the game? And does that change the way everybody's talking about Kellen Mond today or yesterday?
I think so. I think it was a team effort and aptitude, especially at the skill position quarterback. I know the running backs missed some assignments in terms of blocking, and the receivers had drops. It definitely was not all on Kellen. Absolutely. Four of those catches are made. I think we totally are talking about a different ball game today.
Kellen had a pretty good war wound on his face, too, that he said was because the running back that was in at the time missed his assignment. He took a lick to the face.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. Man. Wearing a helmet and still end up with a bloody face. Yeah, that means you took quite a hit.
Yeah.
Kellen didn't have a great game. There's more to it than just that season. That's something I know you wanted to hit on.
Well, I think about when I look at A&M's offense, as we learned under the Jimbo era, number one, the quarterback and Jimbo's got to be hand-in-hand. And I always wonder, what kind of game did Jimbo call? Because a lot of people after the game are really on Venables because he called such a good game. And you got to give him credit because Oklahoma hasn't had a good defense since he left up there. He is a very good defensive coordinator. And then I always look, I write down, you know, they come out in these packages. They're going to do a lot of times three wides or four wides. And I forget what the first series maybe I wrote down, like they went it, one time they went with tight ends and the next time they come out, they go with them. My point being is there's something to be said in that. And I know the receivers dropped the ball and they should have been better, but it just seemed that sometimes Venables called up the right defense to stop A&M. And you got to give the other team credit. That's why he's making $2 million a year or whatever. And like you mentioned, somebody missed blocks. And some, and you want to throw Mond underneath the bus. He didn't have a good game. He was the first to admit it. And like Olin said, you had four of those 15 catches for 60 yards. Then his line looks better. Well, if Jimbo calls four more plays right, he called the Buckley play right. That was the right read. That looked like that was the first read. That was 7 points it was in there. So you start looking at all the people contributing, and then probably, you know, we know in Jimbo, he called that play. God dang it, you got to catch that ball. You know, to himself, he make it's the right call.
That's quite a Jimbo impression.
And so I think it was a frustrating day for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe the one block you didn't make was the time they got the negative play. And then you throw Mond underneath the bus, and I've been on reading social media, and I'm laughing because – Jimbo's, the way things work, it's got to start
and
with
by
him.
Social media, you mean at TexAgs, correct?
Yeah. Of course. But okay. I'm just saying is it's just
didn't know he was on social media.
And I like the fact that Mond is man enough to say, hey, man, I didn't have a good game. Yeah. Well, I didn't see a lot of people having a good game.
Hey,
know?
Two things.
Good points.
On Brent Venables. Okay. Man, is he fun to watch on the sidelines, first of all, because he is so into it. He's so passionate and he's so good at what he does. Number two. Why hasn't he gotten a head coaching job over the years?
That's a great point.
He's an incredible coach. I mean, is he one of those guys who just says, I'm all about the defense and I don't want to deal with
no,
the whole package?
No, because he has tried to get jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Arkansas, okay. A couple
so
other
there,
things.
Yeah,
yes.
There are obviously some reasons there. But I will say this. He's great at what he does in terms of coordinating a defense.
He's making really good points. Lucci said today on the show on TexAgs Radio that in a sort of a clandestine way – Clemson went and visited with Iowa State just to learn the 3-3 stack with 5 DBs, but with 3 down linemen, an odd front, and then 3 linebackers. You just keep 3 linebackers, and you still get 5 DBs out there. And did you see what he did? I rewatched the game, and Blackshear's like, they never do this. And he played Simmons, who's normally a Sam linebacker, in the middle of the two safeties at safety. He's literally playing a 3-3-3 with 2 corners. And that'll confuse you. Right, and everything you game plan for is out the window. Now, scrap the game plan. We stayed up day and night and didn't sleep all week to get ready for this, and this isn't what they're running. Right? So they did a few new things.
He's one of the few guys I'd name on a hand that are geniuses in coaching college football.
And he loves going against Jimbo. And once again, that guy talked about halftime. He said Venables loves going against Jimbo. I mean,
and usually Jimbo wins.
Certain guys gets jacked up, you know.
They've gotten each other pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, after each other.
I thought Fisher actually called a good game when you consider – Again, the play was there on that second play of the game. They got down onto, you know, Moot drove down to the 15 and stalled. They had some other, you know, look, if I'm looking at 3rd and 5, that's hard enough to pick up. Mm-hmm. But when my right tackle jumps, and then the next time I got 3rd and 5, and my center doesn't snap the ball, and I keep getting, and then the next time he rolls it back there, and I keep, I can't, as a coach, I can call plays, but I can't make the guy, you know, react to the snap count. I mean, you know, I thought that when, you know, you get down to, look, they were in the red zone how many times against Clemson? And when I think about Clemson, 3 times in the red zone and 1 time they had an open receiver deep and missed it. And when I think about the national championship game, everybody talks, rightly so, about Justin Ross, T. Higgins, and Trevor and all the big plays they're making. But I keep going back to Alabama had 16 points. That's how good that defense was. I know the personnel is a lot different, but they're not replacing those first-round picks with bad guys.
Five stars is what it is.
They may not be future first-round picks. They may be, but they're still NFL players out there.
Travis, a follow-up on what he said, kind of not combating, but take playing off of your Mond point, is Mond didn't play a good game. He's bringing up all these points, and then Owens – talk about it's really hard to get out of your own way when you're starting to come out of it. Now he's getting in a rhythm. He hit that sideline pass to Osmond. He came right back and hit him 2 more times on comebacks. Right now he's getting in a rhythm. It's still 17-3. You score there, you're down. Right, A&M was stopping them in the second half a couple times in a row. You're starting to get some stuff going, and then all of a sudden you're in a 3rd down close to midfield, relatively speaking, Third down and six, daggum got jumps. Right now you're third and 11. And you don't have many third and 11 calls against the number one team in the country.
No.
And then all of a sudden, the very next drive, the center doesn't snap it. They replace the center after that. The new center comes in. He rolls a ground ball on third and four. Right? I mean, you have to pounce on it and punt at that point. So there's just it was just a lot of things contributing to the fact that Jimbo, who in the last 7 years was six different quarterbacks, has averaged 30 points a game against Venables. This time he gets 10 and one touchdown with the same quarterback back-to-back season.
No, and I certainly well know that there was a lot of contributing factors. Most of that was just kind of just psychoanalyzing Mond a little bit in the way that we've kind of interacted. And he's been a little bit different this season and especially afterwards. But, I mean, it is good on him, too, that like what Brent said, that he did take a lot of the responsibility, even when the responsibility wasn't necessarily his. I just think that it'll be interesting to continue to follow his mentality as we get to talk to him and kind of continue to follow his body language, because they drew a lot from the game last year and how close they were, and they weren't necessarily as close this year, and to see how they move on past this game.
Uh-oh. Could have been really interesting there, too, early in the third quarter.
Yeah.
We were all watching Kellen on that drive. He was limping, hopping. When the series ends, he's hopping off the field. Zach Calzada's over there hurriedly throwing passes. And I'm like, okay, we're about to see a true freshman at number one Clemson against this defense.
Yep.
You know, a Georgian, not far from that whole setting, grew up there. But, of course, Kellen, they got him some fluids and everything, and he was able to come back. And he's a fighter. It's not like he was going to – it wasn't like Jimbo would have pulled Kellen for ineffectiveness. It had to be something like that, an injury or cramps.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as it were, Kellen comes back on and has a decent rest of the way.
And because of, A, the getting off schedule and down in distance, and, B, because of the score and how things were going, they pretty much abandoned the run game in the second half. And we're basically lumping the entire second half on Kellen. You win this game. And that, I mean, there's something to be said about that as well.
And did it without their running back, who now we know is out for the year with a hamstring injury.
I knew you were going to make that smooth transition.
I just pitched that one right out there for you.
That low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, he tossed it, and it was like soft toss, so I could just kind of try to hit that one out. Right into the glove of the old Skeeters
lefty
pitcher at Huntsville.
It's like all of my slow-pitch softball performances, just rocking it.
Very generic reference to my university at Huntsville. Is that playing for the prison team game?
Did you do some time?
Yeah.
The Texas Penal League.
Burt Reynolds, longest yard.
This guy's not on the list. He's in the Penal League.
Huntsville.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's a big blow to the offense. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. I know they have depth at running back, but the loss of Jashaun Corbin for the year with the hamstring injury to me is a big blow. There's a reason he won the job, because Jimbo would definitely not give it to him otherwise. He was shoulders above the other guys. Isaiah Spiller has made a quick impression, but as a true freshman, I think that year last year that Corbin had under Travion Williams and becoming the workhorse was going to be big for the Aggies. Now he's no longer part of the equation. I know you have Cordarian Richardson, you have Deneric Prince, you have Jacob Cabote. Spiller will get first shot, but in terms of even, you know, in kick returns and also primarily as the featured back, a guy who could catch the ball out of the backfield, his loss is big for this offense.
I agree.
Yeah, it's not the running aspect that worries me. I mean, Spillers has showed me that he can run. But remember, I can't remember if it was in the spring or in August, and Jimbo is just raving about Jashaun, and he's saying, you know, there's nothing that you need him to do on the football field that he doesn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
And he can catch it. He'll block. You know, he'll do all the things that you need. And, you know, we saw, you know, Spiller can run it, and he wouldn't be here if he couldn't run it. But freshman guys aren't typically as adept at coming in and catching the ball out of the backfield and more than anything else, understanding their blocking assignments and pass protection.
And also, Corbin was pretty good at kickoff return.
Right.
Him and Paul, your kicking game was pretty sound. Now someone's going to have to step up with Corbin out. And also, don't forget, that's now – I thought Cup was going to be the tight end, so that's two – key cogs you've lost that you maybe were planning on, you know, 2 weeks in before spring drill started,
yeah.
And now those two guys are gone.
Safety valve chain movers, too. I mean, Cup could have moved some chains for you and got you going. Big target. You can't overthrow Baylor Cup from 10 yards out, I promise you that. And then a good swing guy, you know, and really good out of the backfield in Corbin. That's a huge loss.
And you talk a lot about all these true freshmen that are coming in that are going to be in that backfield and in rotation. It kind of gets me to put my eyes a little bit more on Jacob Cabote, because he's a guy that when he came in here, Sumlin raved about him in spring camp, and he was one of those guys that I believe, you know, was someone was talking about should be at prom and should be doing all kinds of other stuff, but was there and doing a good job. And then since then, it's kind of been much ado about nothing. And so in the same vein as the Ronnie Elam kind of thing, where he waited his turn, has now stepped up and is doing some big things. I'm interested to see if this could be a Jacob Cabote's time too, to step up. And Kellen Mond said he is kind of one of the veteran voices of that running back room, because he simply is just the one that has experience. And so it could be a really good story. It could be one of those Ronnie Elam-esque stories. If he could step in there and make an impact, even if it's the kind of number two change of pace guy behind Spiller.
Yeah, all this is great. You got a true freshman as your starter. You got a guy that's barely played as your backup. Another guy that's barely played as your backup. Another guy that's barely played as your backup. Kellen Mond, you've been talking about it for forever, OB. It's time to design the legs to be a big part of this run game moving forward.
Well, we've seen him run. We saw him run 62 yards for a touchdown against North Carolina State. We saw a 50-something yard run against Alabama. He had a, 70-something yard against Arkansas as a freshman. He can definitely run. My take has always been criticism is not what he does in the designed runs, just hold on to the football after you've been hit, but it's the scrambling. And if he adds that, that can boost the run. I remember, I'm not going to compare him to Johnny Manziel, okay? But I do remember when that year that was so successful, your leading rusher was the quarterback. I don't know if it necessarily has to be outlandish to think that Kellen can be a significant contributor in the running game.
Very good point. So this week's gift, a hat from the Association of Former Students. There you go, OB.
See, I don't know. Okay,
you're mowing so that.
Kellen,
we give prizes away to the best point lid of the day. There
it's
you go.
Good on you.
Yeah, and you can always like give that it up if you don't like it. It's but always good. To Brent's gotten all that. Most of them so far. So
most of them being a heck of a backpack.
Yeah. Anyway, your point.
I don't remember
off the Corbin and Mon. Yeah. And Mon,
so taken aback by that hat.
Yeah, by that sweet, because I started looking at that ring on that.
And exactly.
See, Brent was thinking, "Well, Olin, give that to me." It
was gone. It was. Kellen Mond has put on about, okay, you're mentioning him rushing so much, and, mm-hmm. And we all, as you said, the Arkansas run in particular, when he's going down that line, you're going, man, this true freshman has some wheels. He's put on, about 20 pounds since then? I think he's lost a little mm-hmm. bit of that elusiveness of speed. Now, you'll take that because he's bigger, tougher, more durable quarterback, but I'm not quite sure he's that same runner in terms of being elusive. And, of course, I guess we can find out, right, because we haven't really seen it. But I have seen when he has run, it hasn't been quite that same speed and shiftiness as well.
Yeah, but I agree with all of them. Even the play that he fumbled, you could see what a great play, because they ran left and it was a lot of space when he ran. And he just need, like you said, if he held on the ball, that was going to be such a positive play.
Yeah. You might see a lot. That was a RPO keeper, it looks like. And you might see a lot more of those thrown into the playbook without a good veteran running back in there to let Mond put the running game into his own hands and decide.
All right, all this love for Brent Venables. How about the guy calling plays for Texas A&M and Elko and what he's doing defensively when he loses six of his front seven guys? He doesn't have Renfro, and you're playing the number one team on the road at Clemson, and you hold him under 25 for the first time since the end of the 2017 season. OB.
I was very impressed with the defense. I'll say this. I think we can all agree. If you can hold that offense to 24 points, you've done something remarkable. And if you can get anything close to that kind of effort from your defense the rest of the way, then, a 9 or 10 win season is not out of the realm of possibility, because I still think that you're going to be able to score on this offense. I just think Kellen's better than he showed. There's good receivers. If you can get that kind of effort, if that's what you're going to get on a week in, week out against that kind of offense, I think this will be a really successful season. I don't know if you can, but outside of Alabama, I don't know that you're going to play a quarterback or a group of receivers in that class. And I saw what happened in Austin. I'm not ready to put, LSU and its receivers in that category yet, but that was a heck of a a heck of a defensive effort.
Sure would be nice to visit with the said coordinator about his strategy and calling games as well. But
he's,
you know, he's another one, too, where you're talking about Venables. Why hasn't he gotten a head coaching job? It's essentially a situation where enjoy Mike Elko while you can, Aggies, because I do believe he will be a head coach within the next couple of years. He almost was last year. And was it Temple?
Temple.
Was
that
the, yeah. And I think that's what he wants. You know, that's a goal for him and good for him. So, you know, they need to take advantage of his prowess and his sharpness while they can.
It, Clemson's coordinator after the game had a lot of high praise to heap on Elko, saying that he felt like he got the best of him last year, naturally. And so they were going to try to completely switch things up from anything they'd seen, much similar to what they did on defense. And he called it a cat and mouse game. And I still think that for the most part, Elko pushed or came out on top of that because of what the defense is able to do against that kind of talent.
Yeah.
You look at Elko, I think in that game, four of the five leading tacklers were underclassmen, in Tyree Johnson, Hines at linebacker, and Leon O'Neal and Damani Richardson in the backfield. Four of the five leading tacklers were underclassmen. Once again, at number one, Clemson, making the tackles when you need to. And once again, not only Elko, but the rest of the defensive staff's doing something right. You know, when you're teaching the guys that young the right technique to make the right plays. Now, they didn't make all the plays, but I'm just saying they made a lot of plays.
All right, let's close it out so Brent can go get the Brady, the youngest son, right? So what's this week? Lamar. All right, 2 weeks away from Auburn. It's about what? Getting healthy, 100% healthy, and then it's a little tune-up because in 2 weeks it's about to get real again. You're diving back into the SEC.
Hey, when you're going to have potentially three true freshman running backs carrying the load, it's probably a pretty good time to kind of test some of those guys out, get the training wheels off a little bit and see who can kind of step up and how much is it going to be a 1-2 punch like they've done the past two seasons, or if it's going to be a running back by committee moving forward just to find the guy that has the hot hand that day.
Just all about A&M this week.
Yeah, it's like I said, guys with bumps and bruises, you know, let them play sparingly or not at all to get healthy. Work on the things you did wrong. Try to polish up some things before, you know, the games that really matter.
Okay, I understand there's an emphasis to establish, you know, get the ground game and grind away because that also helps your defense. And let's see, you know, what Isaiah Spiller has. Let's see what Jacob Cabote has. But they got to work on their passing game, too.
Sir.
Seven drop passes, you got to throw the ball to the receiver. So I'll be curious to see the balance that Jimbo tries to do against Lamar in terms of saying, hey, we got to get these things cured before we open SEC play against Auburn.
Yeah.
You're right. They got to hang 70 on these guys because they need to get passes to all their receivers. And like we talked before, they really drops 15 yards and more. So they're going to have to throw 20-yard passes against competition just to see if those guys can make it.
Get some work for Caleb Chapman. Get some work for Anaya Smith, these guys that should help you as the year goes along.
Look forward to seeing Beaumont come to town, Gabe.
Lamar's at the wrong place at the wrong time because A&M needs to come out and play
well. About it.
You know how many plays Justin Ross played against A&M last year because he's a true freshman, not quite ready by week two? One. He had 1,000 yards on the money last year to lead Clemson in yardage. I'm not saying that these freshmen, these young guys are Justin Ross, but the point is you're not always immediately ready. It doesn't mean you're not going to be. But games like this are big in that front.
Who would you put back on the kickoff to take Corbin's place? For some reason, I always want to call him Jayshon Sanders, and then I have to go back
and
change it.
Well, then you look at who's kind of a more of a burner. Would that be Prince? I mean, you know, you want the guys who are
nice.
Anaya Smith is the guy that I know. That was the number one bullet point when they signed him on signing day. Is, man, this is a special teams game changer. So I know he's kind of
talking about an underrated prospect.
Yeah, a little bumped and bruised, I think, to start the season. So seeing if he might be an option.
Yeah. Well, Jalen Preston can return kicks.
Yeah, that's another guy probably needs to get on the field, but just see if he's got it.
Chase Lane, I think, was a guy who has been returned some kicks and was talked about. Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the track team as well, so maybe see those guys. Put him in there in a game like this. You can play four games and still redshirt him now. Put him in a game like this and say, I didn't know he quite
good
had
point.
That,
good point.
Right? We'll see. Guys, thank you very much.
Enjoyed it.
6 o'clock, a night game at Kyle Field this weekend, A&M and Beaumont. And we'll be back to break all that up, break all that down, up and down.
Proper respect.
With all proper respect. Lamar's coming in, and then we'll break it down. And we'll look ahead to
Westbrook.
Oh, well, that's harder.
Yeah.
They played him like 100 years ago, I think, didn't they?
That's right.
And then they'll, that might have been Galveston Ball. And then we'll look ahead to Auburn next week. We spend most of the time looking ahead to Auburn next week on Press Row Podcast. You can go learn more information about all of our podcasts at texags.com/podcast. It's the Press Row on texags.com.